This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
There we go, it's Brandy and Monica. This boy is mine. Welcome back. This is FUBAR Radio. We are, I was going to say, balls deep into the 24-hour marathon. And I am going to say it, we are balls deep.
You are indeed.
I'm not getting out of it. I'm really, really not. My name is Rachel Downey. If you have just joined us, welcome. We are here working, supporting, raising awareness for the Heat for She campaign. We would love your donations. So do text UNWN15, followed by the amount you want to donate to 770. in the studio right now, we've got Kate and Helen Richardson Walsh. Welcome! Woo!
Two beautiful ladies!
Two beautiful smiling ladies. Fresh face. How are you? Well, you're like, a little bit fresh face, a little bit. How are you both today?
Great. Yeah, really good. Excited to come in and celebrate He for She and International Women's Day and everything really today. We're feeling empowered.
Well, that's what we were just saying, that this year has been such a big year for International Women's Week. I don't remember it being this huge last year, and it's incredible the things that everyone's doing. For how long do we get to do this for? Another
keep it rolling.
Can we keep it rolling as long as possible? Yeah. All right, cool.
Every day.
No, you're on 24-hour radio forever.
Yeah. Do you know what though? During the night hours. With the darkness out there, it was a bit like, is this it?
I can imagine.
It was a little bit like that. Now, you you're Great Britain hockey teammates and also a married couple. I want to talk about hockey first of all. England hockey over here, doing amazing.
Mm.
It really, really is. Do you feel like, what is it? What has been the turning point? When did that turning point happen, when the hockey began to get the recognition it so deserves?
Well, I think for us it was because of the London Olympics. So, so we lost funding after not qualifying for the Athens Games. And then, fortunately, in the year after, London got given the Games, and that was literally our lifeline as a sport.
Wow.
We had the funding came back for the programme, and also for the first time we were able to train full time.
Wow, in
2009, that was when as a women's team, we decided, right, we're not going to waste this opportunity. Home games, you've got 15,000 people going to come and watch every single one of our games, and we want to put on a good show for them. So we went full time. We trained together pretty much every day, but not only that, it allowed us to really work on our culture and create a team that was a team, and that was in place for London, and then people could see it in the Rio Games as well.
I mean, it's amazing. It really, really is. And I think, anyway, the coverage of women's sport, obviously football, it's getting there, isn't it?
Mm,
what do you think needs to be done to make it even bigger? Because I work in sport. I'm a sports presenter. And I have this debate with my friends when they talk about the Premier League. Mm. And they're like, well, it has the biggest revenue. So why are they going to maybe stop TV airtime for something that doesn't have that revenue? What do you think it is? Because surely someone has to be like, do you know what? Let's make that difference and actually take that risk and not think about revenue. What do you think it is?
No, I think it is somebody being brave and taking control of the situation. Actually, there's something greater than money and finance here. It's actually a bigger, wider concept that we need to think about, and
for sure
role models, and just getting all the whole range of women out there. And I think, we saw the Lionesses of the night were on the red button, wasn't it? And we watched it, but only because it's on a free to air channel that you can switch on easily. That's what we need more of. We need more sport, more opportunity, more role models across a whole range of sports. You can be able to switch on and see, God, someone like me, I can relate to that woman. I look like that, I feel like that. I can be that. That can be me. We need that inspirational piece, as well as it being about cashish as well.
It's true. And Kate, you've got, 375 hockey caps, the most of anyone.
Ever? Anyone ever?
No.
That's what you're saying.
She is so old.
Literally.
You win.
375 hockey caps. Whoever wrote these notes, dead to me.
So I think I'm the most
capped woman in Britain.
Yeah, I think one of the men's players, Barry Middleton, he's got 410 or something crazy like that, and he's still playing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. No, I think it will happen less and less. I'm like Yoda. I was like Yoda. They couldn't get rid of me. I was like,
well, she's moving.
Keep coming back. She keeps coming back for more. I'm retired now. My body is thanking me.
Yeah.
Did you both start together practicing just right from the get-go? How long have you been doing this?
Yeah, we were both pretty much, our careers kind of did mirror each other a little bit. So we both made our debut in 1999.
Wow.
Yeah, way back. And
you were 10.
I missed a few games and tournaments through injury. And But we kept going until 2016 when we eventually won the gold medal. So thankful we did.
Wow.
That's incredible. And Helen, I know in particular you want to talk about mental health, and we've been talking, again, touching on it throughout the show. And I think there's stigma with mental health that still exists. It's still, people find it hard to talk about it. Do you think, what's it like in sport and mental health?
Good question. I think it is something that is definitely starting to be spoken about. There's a lot of conversations around duty of care, and that's at a governance level as well, which is really important. There does seem to be a perception that sports people tend to suffer with mental health issues. I don't know if it is the case that it's more prevalent in sport or not.
Yeah, they had that whole program of footballers and doing headers and whether head injuries cause something. There's a whole link between health and sport, obviously, but mental health. I don't know. Is it spoken about?
I think because there is such a pressured environment, you know, for us every single day, you're being judged whether you like it or not. Mm. You know, the coach is watching you, and you know you're kind of there pushing each other every single day, whether it's on the pitch or in meeting rooms.
But yeah, you're under pressure from a lot of angles.
Yeah, so you obviously want to get selected, but you're being tested physically, and you have fitness tests, and every session is videoed, and so just constantly being tested and pushed and prodded and. That can be challenging. I don't know if that is potentially a reason. It's definitely been spoken about. And fortunately for me, when I was going through my struggles in 2014, the English Institute of Sport is the company that kind of provides all the services for the majority of Olympic sports in this country. And they had them recently partnered with the Priory. Which is... massive.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it was actually massive, and it just started in 2014. So I was able to access, therapy sessions at the Priory.
Wow, that's really good.
Yeah, and it was done really confidentially because, you don't potentially want people to know. If you don't want people to know, but, I've spoken about it openly because it's important to talk. You know, one in four people have a mental health problem. And so it's likely you're going to suffer at some point,
or someone you know, of course.
Or someone you know, exactly. It's definitely on the radar. I think it's getting people are talking about it, and certainly at a top level, they're realizing it needs to be spoken about a lot more.
What's the impact on social media when it comes to mental health problems? Do you think there's a link? Do you think it? Both these straight.
I would not want to be growing up.
No, I say this
in this age. Yeah. I honestly wouldn't.
Oh my word.
I'm so pleased.
My 14-year-old cousins, even like younger, everything is snapped and everything. Obviously, I do as well, but I'm so lucky that I had at least secondary school not having to think about that. It's just a whole added pressure of having to film something else. Like everything you're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel so thankful that I just kind of missed that just a little bit.
Yeah. Like we say, I mean, I was bullied at primary school, but when you left school and you went home, you could shut the door and it was gone.
Yeah.
And now it's
true.
Constant.
Constant.
You cannot escape it. And, even if you're not on it, it's going on behind your back and you find out about it. And we go into schools a lot, don't we, and talk to young people. Yeah, loads. And it's amazing. Mm. There are brilliant pockets of amazing stuff that's going on. LGBT networks being set up by the pupils in the schools.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I know. That's really
amazing.
Cool, isn't it?
I know, amazing. But then there is still that bullying, and there is still homophobia, and there is still, about appearance and social media and all that kind of stuff that goes on. And we just need to empower these young people to understand, the power of that thing in their hand, that phone, that social media. It's the strength that lies in them, and not what the likes or the follows, or you don't get your self-confidence, your self-esteem from that. It's it within.
It's just all the filters.
Oh,
it's
my gosh.
Everyone's face is like perfect.
Honestly, my other half, I remember a little while ago I was enjoying a filter, and I might have had a little bit to drink as well, so you filter and you filter, and it was like, Rach, can't even see your nose. I was like, post. It's good to go. There is nothing there. I'm ageless. But it is really, really bad. It is. And, with the younger generation, how do you do it? How do you break through to them to say it's not about the phone? It's because that it's like another language, isn't it? Mm.
It's everything.
Identity. So how do you do it? How do you break through all that?
So in the team, we talked a lot about our super strengths and that everybody has super strengths that only you have. They're personal to you and everyone's got their own individual things. And knowing of that and that right at your core of your being is this is who I am, this is my value, this is my worth. And I think if you're able to stand up to your in front and to say to yourself in the mirror, this is who I am, this is what I've got, I think that will keep you strong. If you can share it then with your support network, with your friends, with your family, I think that will also generate that support network and those bonds between you, and that will give you the strength. I think
we just, we're so good, aren't we, knowing all our bad points and you know, looking at ourselves and thinking, oh, I hate that about myself.
Yeah. Or, yeah, what about the good stuff?
But
it's true.
We don't. Yeah,
it's like
instinctively
we have to
appreciate ourselves.
Oh, yeah. I find like someone gives me a compliment, you have to apologise for it in a way. It's really weird how we're like that. It's like we're apologising for being us.
Yeah,
and we feel more comfortable to pull ourselves down. And again, throughout the night, we've been talking about kind of self love. But where do you begin with self love? How do you even begin to, I guess, accept who you are and your past? It's tough, isn't it?
Oh god, it's really hard. Yeah. And we did work hard on it in the team, didn't we? We did a lot of stuff on self-awareness, which is frightening.
Yeah.
You know, holding that mirror up.
Yeah. You've got to be completely honest with yourself.
Yeah. It's hardcore. Yeah.
Gosh.
We did it. So we did it kind of with individually with a psychologist. We were taken out of our comfort zone all the time. You know, we'd go to the Marines or we'd have to do an improv comedy session, which was just terrifying.
Oh, an improv comedy session. Even that in itself.
Wow. I don't care. I'll stick with my securities. I'm getting on stage. I'm not doing it. Wow, that scares me.
Hideous,
but
yeah.
I guess you're losing your inhibitions.
Yeah, and once you've completed that, then you can take on anything, really.
Oh, yeah, improv exactly. On stage. Yeah. Give me hockey anytime. Please give me hockey
very
anytime.
True. Yeah, all of us felt exactly the same way. Although there was a couple of people that loved it.
Of course they did. They embraced it. Again, another thing we've spoken about throughout the night is mentoring. I mentor for Centrepoint, and it took me a long, long time to think I could mentor because I thought I need this qualification or I need to have this life experience behind me. I didn't feel like I was anything to kind of talk to someone, but that's not the case, is it? And mentoring is really important.
Yeah, it is. We were having a conversation about this last night at another event, and I think the word mentor is a bit, it's strange, it's a bit weird, isn't
it's
it?
Like people think,
Really,
it should just be friends.
The guru. Actually, it is just.
It's just being friends to talk to.
A partner or our teammates, we're our mentors. Just offering support, a bit of challenge, you know, have you, and different perspectives.
Mm.
That's what a mentor is, just making you think, someone who makes you think in a different way, and just checking that, you know, you haven't got the blinkers on and you're going down this road that isn't potentially right. But yeah, I think the word mentor is a bit strange. But
it is. It's a bit too official, isn't it?
Yeah.
What it really is just someone to listen to.
Basically.
Yeah.
We're all each other's mentors. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Females in sport. Let's talk about sexism. Here we go. What have you both come across over the years, and have you seen it getting better at all or changing?
It's definitely gotten better since we first got into the team. So I think one of the first things I remember, the advertising campaign for some hockey matches that were going on at our centre, our kind of central place in Milton Keynes, and it was one of the players in a black evening dress or something, kind of lounging, and it was like, was it like your place at, or my place
at eight?
Yeah, my place at eight. And it's like,
really?
That was advertising a game. Okay, this woman is actually a hockey player. I don't know if you know, goodness knows, yeah, who we're hoping we're going to turn up. No idea what's happening at eight at her place, but
wow.
Yeah, so, and it has gotten better. Yeah, it's gotten loads better, but we still, you know, after Rio. And it's really hard. This is when it's really hard sometimes being a woman in 2018, because you're like, you know, no, we don't need to wear fancy dresses. We've won a gold medal. We've played hockey. We, you know, we want to be known for that. Mm-hmm. But we also like dressing up and putting makeup on.
Yeah.
I know. And
delete the other.
No, exactly.
It's
and you, but you find yourself going, no, why? Why are we in that newspaper in sequin dresses? There's no link to winning a gold medal, and it's like it's random. And you, it's
but then also,
hard.
If you want to wear a sequin dress and
also
win, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's both
fine. Yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, I think we just say we want it. We want every kind of role model out there, don't we? You know, if you want, if you look like this, if you do want to wear makeup, if you don't, if you want short hair, you want long hair, you want whatever you want to wear,
you can do it all, honey.
Do it all.
That's don't apologise for it.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. I find, and I've been working in sport for a long time, and I find the worst sexism comes in motorsport because it's a very prehistoric the type of man that's there, and you do find yourself. Obviously, you know you've got to be smarter than the average there because you've got to because you're a woman and you know they're going to try to trick you and do this and do that. And that just goes with the job. You know you've got to be more than what they expect. But you do find yourself, I don't know, it's hard. You find yourself sometimes apologising or it's tough being a female in sport. How over the next 5 years, 10 years, do you think there's going to be a big difference? Do you think we're going to see women's sport on all the big channels? Do you think it's still a long way off?
It's funny, isn't it? Because after the London Games and everyone was saying, oh, it's the women's games and all this kind of stuff, and then literally nothing happened. But everyone was so hyped up about it. Oh, you know, we really love watching women's sport. And then nobody did anything. And I think it was kind of a bit similar in Rio. There was obviously a lot of female success in Rio. I do think it is changing. I think, you know, I think the BBC are putting on quite a lot of women's sport. I think the other channels are changing. And I think with the three big sports, so football, cricket and rugby, which they're the you know, the majority sports. Hockey is unfortunately still a minority sport, whether it's male or female. But I think those three sports are changing at the top within the association. They are starting to recognise the importance of supporting their female athletes. And so
it's crazy that you even have to say that, by the way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know. I do think it will continue to get better, but I don't. In 5 years' time, I don't think we'll be that far from where we are now.
No, I agree.
I think the FA are doing quite a lot of good work. They're trying to double the number of girls playing football, and they are putting, I think, more money into the national team, but also the league as well, which I think is really important.
There are a lot of women working high up in the FA, and I think that's why we're seeing a change.
True.
And I think that's what we've got to do with a lot of the sports, is get the women up in the boardrooms.
Yeah.
And then it filters down.
Yeah.
I think that's different.
They're also showcasing a lot of adverts that I'm seeing now with lots of women's sport players, which I'm seeing loads more of. Even Santander, Nike, like, they're now pushing forward just the normal girl playing football, that's not really been done until recently, which I've been like,
here you go, guys.
And Man City also released their, was it an advert or just a campaign? Yeah.
They did.
One club. Doesn't matter whether it's men, women, it's just football. And that was really cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
And Helen, are you a Spurs fan?
I am, yeah.
Good girl. You do it. Well, apart from
we won't talk about the other night.
Never happened. We're doing good, aren't we?
We're doing all right.
And Man U.
Man United fan, yeah.
So there must be arguments at home, no? Top four, who's gonna get it?
We were actually at the
Spurs Man U game. We went to go and watch it.
First 10 seconds.
That's brave.
I know.
Both of you going together.
It's kind of one all because we went to Manchester United and watched it and watched Tottenham, Manchester United Tottenham, and we won. And then we went to Spurs and watched Spurs Man United and Spurs absolutely killed us. So
does that cause a rift? Are you guys arguing after it? What happened?
There's a mini bit of tension.
Yeah, slight bit of tension.
Yeah, there is. I like that. But again, it shows the importance of sport, of women's role in sport. Last question, I'll ask you both. I'll start with you, Kate. Inspirational woman or women, what would you say?
Well, I'd say my mum.
Good answer. Mother's Day coming up.
Yeah.
Exactly. Tomorrow. If for everyone who forgot, Mother's Day is tomorrow.
My card's already in the post.
There's lots of online shops that can help you out at this point. She's not done something, but yeah, my mum. She's just so ambitious, authentic, genuine, driven, and brought myself and my sister up with my dad to you know, fly the nest and just go and be whatever we wanted to be. I'll be forever grateful for the kind of role that she set me.
You should take this clip and send that to her tomorrow.
Best mother's day ever.
You are the best mum.
That would be.
That would actually be. We're going to do that. We'll send it to you after the show.
Get it done.
What about you? What would you say?
So my mum.
You are the greatest.
Your mum is amazing.
I would genuinely say my mum as well. Because, I mean, she showed me how strong women can be. She is incredible. But I will give her another answer. And I will just say, I guess, kind of my teammates. They inspired me every day. It was tough. It was really tough. Mm. And particularly those guys who didn't get selected for the Olympic Games, they kept pushing themselves and kept going every single day. And to be able to do that selflessly for the purpose of our vision.
It's
inspiring.
And for any young females wanting to get into hockey, what advice would you give them?
Get out there, pick up a stick. I'd just say go for it. I think the great thing about hockey is that it's for all shapes and sizes. There is a position in a hockey club for you somewhere. There's walking hockey now. There's back to hockey if you just want to, you know, pop in and out and not do it every weekend. There's a club and a team for you, and it is one of the most brilliant environments, because we can say from our experience, hockey is so welcoming. And it's a place where you can be comfortable in your own skin, whoever you are, whatever that may be. So just go out there and pick up a stick.
There's so many clubs around the country. So go online, go on the England Hockey website, find your local club, and just get down on a Sunday morning when they do their junior training and get involved. They'll welcome you with open arms.
That's amazing.
Fabulous.
Well, Kate and Helen Richardson Walsh, thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Good luck with the rest of the day.
Best of British to me, that's what I'm going to say. Best of British.
We're
going to leave you for a couple of minutes with Lady Gaga's Bad Romance.
Ra ra ah, 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 Roma, Roma, ma, Gaga, ooh la la, what's your bad romance? Touch of your head.
That was Lady Gaga, Bad Romance, and in the studio right now we've got Ferhan Khan. Welcome!
Thank you for having me here. Woo. So good to be here with you fabulous women.
Oh, it's thank you. And I'm also loving your fabulous hat, by the way. I'm all about the hats.
Thank you.
And you're looking kind of fly.
I was having a little bit of a mask day. Otherwise, I would have had loads of nail varnish and lipstick and stuff on, you know, to celebrate International Women's Day.
Darn it!
But you know what? I'll leave it to you today. You look fabulous and beautiful.
I don't think so. This ain't my best. It's so wonderful to have you on the show, to be part of the He for She campaign. And I want to mention and talk about the work you're doing. And we, the name, Gaysians.org. Tell me.
Gaysians.org. Well, if you didn't know, it's a portmanteau of, I know, posh word there, of the word gay and the word Asian.
Because I never heard it before. I was just saying, I was like, what a fantastic word.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Love it.
Well, you know, we're just getting started out. But wait till you see us. We'll be all over. It'll be an Asian invasion.
Asian invasion. Persuasion. I like it.
Asian persuasion, exactly.
Amazing. Well, tell us all about it.
Yeah, so essentially it's an umbrella organisation. We're an umbrella organisation to bring together all of the South Asian LGBT groups that are in existence already doing great work in the UK, in London, a little bit abroad as well. So so it's not just Indian, it's not just Pakistani, it's not just Bangladeshi, it's not just Muslim, it's not just Sikh, it's not just Hindu, it's everyone all together being fabulous and Asian and gay and LGBT as well. So the word Gaysians obviously is a little bit non-inclusive with the word gay, but we are an LGBTQIA plus umbrella organisation. So we do represent the whole rainbow of sexual and gender identities within the LGBTQIA plus umbrella.
So what happens when you all get together? Is it just...
Oh, we have a bhangra.
Must be one big party.
Must be.
It was at Pride last year, actually. We got... Wow. We had a march for the first time, our first Pride, and it was a spectacle to behold. We were dancing down the street, bhangra music, with the doll playing, and everyone loved it. Everyone got involved. All of the crowds on the
sounds
side,
fabulous.
Like, it does sound fabulous. It really does. And how long have you been involved in Gaysians?
So actually only a year, personally. But it's been going for about a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how did you, stumble across it? Or was it something you felt that...
was needed?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't personally found it, I must say. I'd love to take the credit. But, I can't say anything. We'll believe you. I should give credit to Lax, Rita, and Harv. They are the Gaysians founders. Actually, sorry, I'm going to say Rita, Lax, and Harv. This is International Women's Day. Women's Rights is fun. What am I doing?
I salute you, sir.
Well done. No, this is the unconscious biases that we have to deal with. So I correct myself. Rita Loy Shaw is actually the energy behind it. Lax, I think essentially it was kind of his brainchild in a way as well. And then Harv kind of brings it all together as well. So they're the three founders. And sorry, what was your original question you wanted to know?
What was your reason to get involved?
Well, actually, it's funny because I met Lax. On a night out, of course, like you do with gay men, you know, you get around. it was a night out at XXL, which is a fabulous little bear night in London. And he'd recognised me from my appearance on the TV show Muslims Like Us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes, you were. Oh, yes, you know what?
Now she's
now no. I'm awake. Yes, no, that's right. Because we were talking about this before. But yeah, that was an incredible programme.
Thank you.
It was.
It must be. I mean, it did win a BAFTA.
It did. It was good.
But yeah, no. So he recognised me from that. So he was like, well, I'm going to pluck you for the Muslim side of things, I think.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We've obviously the He for She campaign, all about men and women working together instead of... There's other campaigns where you're going about women being the best or men being the best. No, not one is better than the other. We need each other to work together. Mm. I think the Time's Up campaign, I know a lot of my male friends were shocked by the amount of stories I could tell them about sexual harassment and forms of sexual abuse I've had over my life. Do you think it's great that we're now talking about it? Do you think now it's great that, you know, a lot of maybe the men in your life, and you probably are maybe not as aware of what women have had to go through?
Yes, I think it's long overdue, I would say. I think it's long overdue.
It's crazy that it's only happening.
Yeah, that this power imbalance, this ability that... you know, predominantly men, well, actually men have had, you know, up until now, in order to, you know, basically control the women that enter the workplace into their industries and make them feel as though they have to, you know, sacrifice or like basically sacrifice their own, you know, their own selves just to kind of like, just to be able to survive in their industries. And it's the entertainment industry, and it's not limited to that. Sport is everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
It's systemic to so many industries. And I think it's long overdue. And yeah, of course it's time to talk about it. What I would say, I think, is that there are also, I would say, power imbalances where you know, some... men can be kind of subjected to a very similar...
Sometimes people of power will take advantage to those that aren't in those positions.
I mean,
you
only need to look at how Kevin Spacey... You
know, exactly.
You know, that's the only thing I would say.
And the thing is, when stories come out, you always hear certain stories that have come out, you've kind of heard about it before, you're not shocked by it. And it's funny how you can get away with it. It's that fear culture. And I've mentioned this before, I do a lot in motorsport, and I've had a lot that's happened to me with motorsport, and there's one very big name in F1 that at the time I never said anything because I thought if I did, I'll lose my work. Mm. And it's funny, whereas now I don't think that would happen. I like to think it wouldn't happen. I think we have more freedom to speak out, don't we?
I think that you have possibly have more freedom to speak out, but I think that they have less places to hide. I think
there's more awareness over the matter now.
There's a lot more awareness, and I think
that's so true.
Yeah, I mean, they can't hide. Mm. They can't because you can just.
There's repercussions now.
You have the freedom to go on your phone and just like make one little tweet,
and then it will go viral. True. Very true.
140 characters. You know, that is
140 characters.
Well, can I ask, in with your Gaysians? Of course, it's like pie and it's great. You know, when you go all get together, is there a kind of level or layer to when you guys are together where people are kind of confessing like stories or, you know, something that's troubling them in their experiences?
Actually, it's funny you say that because not particularly Gaysians, but with my charity, my Muslim LGBT plus charity, Hidayah, run by Shalina, this amazing woman that is just doing great work to empower young Muslim LGBT people to feel less ashamed of themselves, to drop that shame, and it's, you know, it's always women doing this. It's like they're pushing for a better world, and I fucking love that.
Anyway, I do.
Girl power.
So Shalina's charity, we have a once a month stories event. Funnily enough, that you mentioned, and it's at the South Bank, and we do get together specifically because of the Muslim experience being unique.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
Being unique, and you know, you don't have to be particularly, you don't have to be like a devout Muslim, but you know, if you identify with the Muslim upbringing, if you identify with the Muslim experience, then you come along, you share your stories, you empower each other, you tell each other, gosh, you know, we shouldn't actually have to deal with this.
No.
And again, it's the power of being able to talk about this openly now. It really does make a difference. Do you think as well the younger generation, actually have more advantage than we did, because they are learning about all of this right now. They're seeing it on social media, they're seeing the Time's Up campaign on Twitter, all the hashtags. Do you think they're going to have a bit of an easier time than us? But do you think they are? Do you think it's going to be changing for the generation coming through?
So I look at my niece, I have two nieces actually, and I look at my niece and I think, you know, I'm so excited for her. I'm so excited for the life that she's going to live, because I come from a family predominantly of women. I've been raised predominantly by women. My sisters are 12, 15 and 17 years older than me.
Yeah. So it's like having four mums.
Exactly. So I have 4 months. And my father...
A lot of emotion in there.
Yeah. You're telling me. Oh, yeah.
Brave man.
It was great. It was like never a dull moment.
Never.
I wouldn't swap it for the world.
No, but...
You know, it's also a lot of fun. Yeah. You know, it was high drama, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I have one sister and that's like crazy enough. So the fact that you have four.
I have four women in my life and they're all like way older than me. Like the youngest is 12 years older. And my father was always at work, obviously. So I didn't really. So I was predominantly raised by women. Now, what I have learned from my experience of being, you know, in a family predominantly of women is that I have to recognise what my male privilege is, how it manifests. You know? So I've been constantly reminded of that, particularly in a South Asian family environment where men are far too highly prized. It actually disturbs me to see how some South Asian...
Do you think that's shifting at all?
Not fast enough, not at all. No. I can say as a South Asian man that I don't think it's shifting fast enough at all. I think we're way behind. South Asians, you know, in this country, in, you know, maybe actually things are progressing better in the homeland, because you never know. We have this weird habit in this country, South Asians, of being stuck in time, of being stuck in the time when our parents came to this country in the 60s. You know, we're still living in that kind of like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, where those same rules applied. They wanted to preserve it, you know, to sort of like preserve it in time. You know, to cynically not lose their own culture.
And I guess even more so because you're contrasting it against what's going on in London, which is, you know, complete opposites to what's going on at the family home, maybe, or their traditions. So they want to try to sustain it even more to hold on to it. I don't know.
Well, London, I think, is the place to be when you want to be at the forefront of social movements. Like
defo.
And, you know, so my family background is Glaswegian. I was born and raised in Glasgow, obviously. So my family are all up there. So things move slower there. Yes, London, I suppose it frightens a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, why are these things
happening? What's going on?
Why are people talking? Why are they just being so open? Actually, that's what my mother, bless her, said to me after the TV show. She said, why are you being so open?
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Why not? I mean,
why are you being so open?
Why
Fran?
Are you being so open?
And then later on, she's like, Fran, actually, you're quite brave.
But you are.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
But how amazing is that to hear that from your mum?
It was an amazing, amazing moment, because I think in that moment, she actually finally believed that I could say it and survive. I could say, I'm a gay man. And still, okay, everything's fine.
And be praised for it, and for anything.
And actually, yeah, that as well. I didn't even realise that would happen. I thought, I have to do this for me when I did it.
Which is very brave in itself.
Oh, thanks, darling. Thank you. But I had to do it for me because I knew that there was something within me that I did not need to feel ashamed of, that I was being made to feel ashamed of. And when I went and did it, it was a little bit scary, but I knew I had to do it. And I think my mother, first of all, was like, why are you so open? And then everyone's going to know
why
now.
So open?
And then later on, I think when things settled down, the dust settled, it was like, oh, actually, you're quite brave.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Because again, it's a generational thing too. So it's amazing to, I guess, make her, not even change her mind, but just for her to see this new, the way the world is, and as open as the world is, and free as the world is.
And that's not a bad thing. That's actually quite
a beautiful, it's a wonderful thing. We're 2018, guys.
I fucking love 2018.
I'm excited. Me too. So many changes. There's so many changes. Can I just say, even I was at a He for She night last night, and the biggest change that I see now in probably the end of 2017 and 2018 is that we have gender neutral toilets. Can I just put out there? Girls, we were all in the same toilets. And I was like, oh my gosh, every
that
club I've gone to.
It's very
give like, it's really weird, but it's quite like, right, like we are in 2018, this is a difference. Do you know what I mean?
It's exciting.
It is exciting,
but it would give me stage fright.
I think the boys are getting a bit of stage fright over there.
I realise girls could get stage fright. This is why we need to have these conversations.
Girls
can get stage fright as well.
Oh yeah, 100%. But yeah, definitely the boys over there in the corner, they were kept looking behind us like, are you looking at me?
Yeah, I've probably got a bit of stage right now just talking about it, let's be honest.
I mean, like, a toilet.
But it's very interesting.
The toilet is the least romantic, erotic place you can imagine.
But the only thing else...
Why would you need to separate women and men from there?
It's like, true.
It's not like, come on, you know, but it's all right. We can be separated there. I'm up for that.
The only thing that I'd say is that when you go to a girl's toilet, I'm normally talking about a guy in the event, so, and he could be peeing right next to me as I'm trying to talk to my friend about him, so that's the only nook in the idea, but apart from that I love it.
Also, aren't girls' toilets a bit like, smell nicer?
They do, like, they're a bit nicer.
I'm sorry, but they really are. Men, not so much. Yeah. I don't want to see that.
I can say as a man that they smell bad.
Yeah.
By and large, we don't aim well.
I'm asking everyone that comes on who their inspirational woman or women are, and instead of looking at anyone in your family, so I don't want the mum answer.
I heard the mum
wonderful
answer.
Yeah, who would you
well,
say
I had something prepared actually. But it's amazing. Actually, it didn't even take that long to prepare, but it's Rosa Parks.
Oh.
Of course it's Rosa
great,
Parks
great great no, great
I haven't said that yet actually.
Do you know what, of course it's Rosa
yes,
Parks. She
of
is
course.
She is the epitome of silent protest. She's the epitome of, look, I'm just sitting here. I'm just being me. I'm being me. Leave me alone.
Mm.
And it's so strong and so powerful and so kind of like just being being human. And also it reminds me that the feminism needs to be intersectional. You know, we can't leave.
So well said, yeah.
We can't leave, you know, the intersections behind. We need to remember that some people get left behind in the movement, not just the feminism movement, not just the LGBT, but also the LGBTQ plus movement. It needs to be intersectional. We need to include everyone and remember some people get left behind, unfortunately, just because of human nature, but we need to remind ourselves of that.
I think on that note, that's an amazing way
To end. Yeah,
thank you so much. It was so interesting to meet you.
Yes, we love you. I love you.
Could you stay? Come find a car.
Yeah, I can live here.
That's why we're late. Ferhan Khan, thank you so much.
Thank
for joining
you.
Us here.
Thank
at
you
Fuba.
For having me.
Thank you.
I've had a lovely day.
We're going to listen now to Madonna, Express Yourself. We'll be back in a few moments.
Make him express how it feels and make
Now that is Madonna, Express Yourself. We are here at FUBAR Radio. We've got about 6 hours left, I believe, of the live 24-hour marathon. And I just want to let you guys know that if you fancy maybe the most perfect Mother's Day gift is Mother's Day tomorrow. We did touch on it and all slightly
don't forget, guys.
Slightly panicked. Then Il Gusto has pink, very sparkling vodka with gold. Absolutely incredible. If you like anything sparkling in drink form, which is my my secret remedy, and vodka, it's all a win-win. Price is only £15. All you need to do is go to www.ilgusto.com. Pink champagne is swirled with edible gold flakes, giving it a stunning appearance with notes of berries and a well-balanced, clean, dry palate.
Wow.
It's perfect to go. And it says here, with a spread of fresh seafood. It's perfect to go with anything, to be honest with you. And Il Gusto offers everything from extra virgin olive, nut and seed oils and vinegars, respected for their nutritional benefits, to aged whiskey and exclusive own brand flavoured spirits. I will be cracking open some Il Gusto probably in about an hour.
Yeah, it sounds great. It's funny, you saw what sparkly drinks. My friend just gave me a link to sparkly beer. You can have glittery beer now.
Oh, that's incredible.
Isn't that just incredible?
It's taken over.
Anything sparkly, I'm all over.
Yeah, definitely. Aminka, thank you so much for joining us.
No, this has been great.
You've been a ray of sunshine.
We've literally just been talking to the most incredible, fascinating people, and everyone is
amazing,
on such an amazing girl power level. I feel like the Spice Girls, and all five of them.
Yeah, I feel like all five Spice
all
Girls.
All five Spice Girls.
Boom. That's all you need. Now, do not go anywhere. We are going to listen to an interview that we recorded a little bit earlier on with Preet Gill. Absolutely fantastic interview, not to be missed. We'll be back on the other side of this in about 10 minutes. See you very, very soon.
On the phone line right now, we've got Preet Gill, British politician. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you very much for having me.
It's wonderful to have you, and it's wonderful for you to be part of our UN Women UK's He for She campaign. I am very excited for many reasons to talk to you. First of all, you are the first female British Sikh MP. What is that accolade like for you to be the first female British Sikh MP?
Firstly, it's a huge honour. Mm. And with that comes a lot of responsibility, because there will be the community that have never had that voice here in Parliament will have a lot of expectations for you to be lobbying on the issues that matter to Sikhs in this country. So it's just such a great privilege to... You know, the fact that it's taken 100 years for us to elect the first Sikh woman, because the last prominent Sikh woman was Sophia Dilip Singh, who was a prominent suffragette. I hope it doesn't take that long for us to make sure Parliament is reflective of the people it serves. And I certainly want to encourage more women from all backgrounds to come forward, really. It's just a huge honour to have made this history.
And I know it is an incredible honour, and I know that there are 208 women now in the Commons, and Labour now have 45% women. It's an incredible time to see how things are changing. Like you said then, you go back, I don't know, 20 years, 50 years, things are changing quite rapidly. Did you see yourself all those years ago growing up in Birmingham? Did you see that this was even a possibility for you?
Firstly, I'm really proud that, we have so many more women, especially in the Labour Party. 45% of our PLP is female, and that means our voices are being heard, which is phenomenal. No, absolutely not. All those years, I'd never thought I'd be sitting here and making history as I have done. Certainly, I've had a role in local government as being a children's services manager and working in the public sector, and been a councillor and a cabinet member as well. And I think it was really when I became a cabinet member and a councillor in Sandwell that's when I really decided that I absolutely wanted to become a member of Parliament and be a strong voice and fight on the things that I saw every day working on the grassroots.
How do you think we can get more women then into Parliament? What do you think needs to be done or needs to change, or maybe opportunities when you were younger that weren't there for you?
I think we need to do a lot more engagement in schools. I mean, one of the things that I've been really keen to do since becoming the Member of Parliament for Birmingham Edgbaston is actually go and do much more outreach and speaking to girls in secondary schools, but also in primary schools, so that people actually understand what an MP actually does. Mm. I made a commitment when I became a Member of Parliament that I wanted to make sure that my office was open to young people and giving them lots of opportunities. So every single month we've made a commitment to have young people do work experience, but we currently have about 4 interns that we've taken on. And I think giving young people at every age group, so through primary, secondary, at university, and those looking for work, an opportunity to have that experience really does enable young people to think, well, actually, is this a career for them? You know, what kind of sort of work they'd like to get involved with? Because not everybody wants to be an MP. There are other things like researchers, campaigners, activists, various roles that you can partake in. And I think it really kind of gives young people the opportunity to explore and sort of consider whether this is something that they actually want to do. I think also, you know, we need to look at the curriculum in our schools and actually rethink whether young people actually understand how decisions are made in the country and the influence that sort of politicians have around policy and decisions that we make. And I don't think that, you know, certainly when I was at school, I fully understood that. And I don't think when I've gone around speaking to young people at schools, so that's actually clear, and many of them are quite surprised and ask me lots of questions about what an MP does. And it's, I think one of the good things, though, that I've seen is in Parliament is seeing a lot of visitors, especially from schools and universities, come to Parliament, and just their reactions as to this being a place of work and what actually happens here when they're here. We need to continue to do more outreach programmes like that.
Well, you mentioned a lot there about mentoring, and I know the Diana Award mentoring program is something obviously very close to your heart, and I actually mentor for Centrepoint, and I agree with you, it's so important to mentor for young people so they know where to turn to, they know options open to them. Let's talk about the Diana Award mentoring program. Number one, why do you think it's important?
Yeah, firstly, I think that's amazing that you're doing that as well, and being a mentor, that's phenomenal, because actually all of us need mentors. I mean, I've had mentors throughout the whole of my life, and I think, for me, I think that what the Diana Award is doing is not just aspirational, but it's absolutely right. It's something that I think we've never in this country really focused and tried to build an evidence base as to the importance and the value base for mentoring. So one of the things that the Diana Award and myself, as the chair of the APPG Mentoring, are looking at is that link between mentoring and social mobility, and currently commissioning some research from the University of Sussex looking at white working class boys at this moment in time. We did an event in my constituency with businesses and with young people who'd gone through the programme with the Diana Award and had been mentored, and it was so powerful to hear from young people who would never have had these opportunities given the backgrounds that they'd come from and some of the struggles that they'd faced, but just hearing from them how the significance of mentoring, the fact that we had young people from primary age talking to a whole group of CEOs, public speaking. I mean, most of us would have struggled with public speaking at that age, but actually to see that level of confidence was really, really heartwarming, and it just shows the kind of power of, you know, businesses and all of us that are in professions giving back to our future leaders, as it were, and making that commitment and time to actually give them opportunities that they would not have normally had.
It's so important, it really is. And one thing as well that I'm kind of having a look at is with the Diana Award, it's reinforcing that anyone can give back as a mentor regardless of age or demographic. And that's very important. I think some people think to be a mentor, you need to have this qualification, you need to have this life experience, but you don't, do you?
No, absolutely not. Because, you know, most people that have gone into the various fields that they haven't had a traditional sort of academic you know, pathway, for example. They may have got there through different ways, and actually them sharing their story, because not everybody will want to follow the traditional routes that, you know, that many of us would have, say, from school to college to university. There are other routes to becoming successful, and success means a lot of different things for a lot of different people. But I think young people having that opportunity to talk to a range of mentors with a range of experiences of different backgrounds is really inspirational and inspiring. I mean, when I was out campaigning before I got elected, it was phenomenal to hear on the doorstep from parents who actually said, my daughter went to the school that you went to, and it's really encouraging that they feel actually that Parliament and becoming an MP is something that is in their reach and something that they can achieve by the very virtue that you went to the local school here. And I think these sort of things are important because what we don't want to do is make young people feel that actually there are jobs and opportunities there that are never going to be attainable for them because of their backgrounds and where they come from.
Mm, I agree. I really, really do. Now, we're speaking to you as part of our fundraising broadcast, obviously, with UN Women UK's He for She campaign. I want to ask you about women who inspire you. But before I do that, I also know that you credit your father and Lord King as inspirations. Can you tell us a little bit, and our listeners who are unaware of Lord King, can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, the late Lord King, a great inspirational story. You know, came to this country, worked as a bus driver, a teacher, set up his own company, became the leader of Samwell Council. And then, you know, joined the House of Lords. Remarkable story, really. And when I became a councillor, I faced lots of barriers, I have to say, initially. And I think it can put you off, actually, because you feel that you've got the skill set and you want to make a difference and you want to be a change maker. But sometimes there are structures and processes in place which make it difficult. And I think, you know, I found that quite difficult. But he was there always saying, no, you should really get involved and you mustn't give up. So it took me about 4 years before I got elected as a councillor. And that's really down to him and his encouragement and his support. And my father was a huge campaigner for the Labour Party, but actually, in his own right, he was a leader of our community at one of the largest gurdwaras for 18 years. He was instrumental when it was a miner strike, always, you know, supporting, working with other communities. There was a recession in Sandwell. I remember, you know, he went and bought cheese from the factory across the road and distributed it to the whole of Sandwell. A lot of people remember that time. It was really, really difficult. So that ethos of food bank was there in the sort of early 80s. Really, you know, and yeah, my father's dream was that I become a member of parliament. He was always saying that, you know, you've got to be part of the system in order to make change, and he was definitely a change maker. He passed away in 2014, so wasn't able to see me be elected as a member of parliament, but would have certainly been very proud. And yeah, you know, that journey really is attributed to him and the late Lord King, really, for continuing to inspire me and encourage me. And you need that. That's really, really important, because the journey is never smooth. And along the way, you know, there will always be people that are very, very supportive. So that's been quite remarkable, really. Yeah.
I think that's incredible. I really, really do. And yeah, you know, you can't make a difference unless you are that change maker, unless you're in the system to make a difference. It's very true. Let's talk about inspirational women. What women do you look up to? Who inspires you?
So I think Sophia Dalip Singh, definitely very, very aspirational. Great that Anita Anand wrote the book and there was a documentary, because I think it gave lots of people an opportunity to understand who she was, the goddaughter of Queen Victoria. But just what a remarkable story in terms of her achievements and her father having come to this country very young. And then her learning about his background, his history, and her grandfather being a ruler, great ruler of India at the time. So she's absolutely somebody who's very, very inspirational. I'd say my mother, because actually my father and his greatness was largely due to my mother, the fact that she was very supportive, understanding. You know, she probably put aside her dreams in order for him to become the man that he did become. I think that's really important. Sacrifices that women make every single day, you know, for me are really, really powerful. And I think as a mother, as a wife, as a sister, as a woman myself, you know, it is much tougher, I think, as a woman, especially being in politics. Just today, I was talking to my member of staff that my daughter's not well. And I really struggle with the fact that, you know, I'd have to take time out from Parliament and not be here, and that worry. But, you know, I had to prioritise the fact that my daughter's unwell. And it's these sort of things that we women go through, and we are so much more tougher on ourselves, and try to give ourselves permission to do the things that we know we absolutely must prioritise. Yeah, so I think there are lots of women out there that are massively inspirational, certainly women here in Parliament. Harriet Harman is one of those, as being a woman that was here largely for a very long period of time, bringing about change. And I think the other person that's really been quite influential in a different way was when I was on the Jo Cox leadership programme, Nan Sloan, that runs that programme. She's really a formidable character, and I think it's the first time I went on a programme where I was probably not as vocal and spent a lot of time listening and taking in, you know, what she had to say about, you know, wanting to become a member of Parliament and the process and what it takes for women to succeed, but also listening to those incredibly powerful women that were on that programme with me and hearing about their journeys and their stories was really remarkable. And actually, it was during that course that I kind of really was able to be clear that I definitely wanted to stand for Parliament. It was crystal clear through that journey, and you know, she, you know, so I would have to say she's just great, really.
Yeah, I think that's amazing answers there. I really, really do. It's so interesting and fascinating talking to you, Preet Gill. Thank you so much for talking to us today for our show, and yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
There you go, that's Preet Gill. I interview, we recorded a little bit earlier on.